This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Steve Sinski, CEO of the American Soybean Association. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with ASA's Steve Sinski next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net, providing individualized protection on more than 540 million acres of farmland. Crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Congress left a lot on the table to accomplish in 2024. One of those items is a new farm bill. Steve Sinski, CEO of the American Soybean Association, is glad legislators approved a one-year extension of the 18 bill. He's hopeful for new policy early in 24. Sinski says next-generation biofuels hold real promise for the soybean industry.
We're talking about billions of gallons of demand that is there, and we've seen the airline industry begin to make some commitments. You know, a lot of those aren't out there for a few years yet, but they're starting to, and so we think it's a great new source of demand. And for us in the soybean world, it means that, you know, we have a new market in addition to, you know, the heavy duty trucks that are going to continue to use biodiesel and renewable diesel because there really aren't many alternatives for over the road heavy duty use equipment. If companies and want to decarbonize, we're starting to see some increased use in the marine sector. And so we look for that to expand. We're already seeing it in locomotives, so rail transportation. And now with the airlines, it just offers tremendous potential.
Steve, I think we're in a day of a paradigm shift where at one time consumers, where at one time industry was about the lowest cost of production. But now in the name of climate, in the name of sustainability, some are willing to spend more to know that they're making a contribution to a better environment. SAF is not cheaper than traditional fuels, but yet you are seeing commitment by companies that want to fall in line.
Yes, we are. But I think, you know, I think some companies are willing to pay more, you know, because of their own carbon goals and carbon reduction goals, pressure from stakeholders, pressure from consumers, shareholders, et cetera. But I still think that at the end of the day, companies are looking at the bottom line and you got to be competitive. And that's where the action that was taken, you know, by the administration to approve, you know, for the Treasury Department that issued its guidance, the commitment to update the GREET model, which is, you know, we believe the gold standard so that can be used to qualify for the tax credits. But also importantly, the announcement was that advanced biofuels that already qualify under the RFS, so think biodiesel and renewable diesel, that those also qualify for the $1.25 up to $1.75 tax credit from the federal government. So having that tax credit to be more price competitive, I still think is going to be very important, and that's why we were so very pleased by the action that the administration took. You know, we're really thankful for our supporters in Congress that helped pressure that, but as well as Secretary Vilsack, because he was a champion within the administration to keep pushing for that.
The Inflation Reduction Act did include funds, as you suggested, for renewable fuels. So the model that was being used to determine was very important. So the devil's in the details. As I understand, the GREET model will be modified, but we don't know how it will be modified until the 1st of March. How closely does your industry watch the development of this criteria?
Oh, yeah, we're going to be watching that pretty closely, and we're going to be meeting with the Department of Energy, with USDA about that and about, you know, what tweaks are going to be made to the GREET model there. So we need to watch that very closely to make sure that they are capturing the best available science and data. And I know that USDA is very much committed and cognizant of that, and again, you know, believes that crop-based biofuels have a bright future, and we just need to reflect modern farming practices that reduce emissions and carbon. We need to reflect other technologies that are there as well.
Agriculture is somewhat disappointed with the EPA's implementation of the RVOs and the RFS with regard to fuel. Does this announcement regarding sustainable aviation fuel have to offset some of those?
It helps. It's a bit of good news, but you're absolutely right. We were still disappointed in the RVOs that were announced by the EPA earlier this year, and we think that, you know, they could have been more aggressive. And we're going to be pushing hard for EPA when they do update those, that they have to be more realistic, and they need to take account of not only the crush expansion that's happening in the soybean industry, but also what our actual productions of renewable fuels, of biodiesel and renewable diesel are, and trying to be a bit more aggressive than, frankly, what we saw this last time.
Steve, from your side of the industry, how far along is this paradigm shift in demand from crushing the bean for the meal to perhaps crushing the bean for the oil as a primary? How far along in the process of building new processing plants and real demand?
The real demand is there. I mean, we're seeing almost a 30% expansion in soybean crush capacity. That is occurring right now, and that is going to continue to occur over the next couple of years. And so that's going to put, you know, a lot more meal and a lot more oil on the market. And of course, that's being generated and fueled by the demand for renewable diesel. And so that is real. I will say that, you know, we did see that, you know, the oil value of the soybean was a bit higher than the meal value for a while, but it has dropped back down, and you still have 80% of the soybean, which is meal, that is still the primary margin maker for soybean crushers. And so it's good, it's real, but I think the oil value came back down after the somewhat disappointing RVO announcements by EPA.
So if Congress is writing a farm bill for the next 5 years, and hopefully to be accomplished in 24, we'll transition to that. But if this paradigm shift is taking place in the soy industry, then, Steve, how should the farm programs, the safety net inside the farm bill, does it need to adjust for this shift that's taking place?
Well, we think definitely yes. You know, you take a look at the soybean safety net, and it is way, way too low in the values. And, you know, we hope that we don't get to the safety net. I mean, we want the demand that is occurring out there, whether that be through trade or whether that be through biofuels, to be able to continue and to keep soybean prices strong. But the purpose of a safety net is so that you have a safety net in case we have, something falls out of bed, in case we would, God forbid, have another China trade war or something like that, where we are losing big markets, whether that's China or other markets that are shut off, and we have a drop in prices. We need a much better soybean safety net, and that has been one of the American Soybean Association's top priorities throughout the Farm Bill process, is urging Congress to improve the soybean safety net while also making sure that they're protecting crop insurance as well.
So gridlock was certainly in effect this fall in Washington, and a new farm bill was not written. Congress wrote an extension and approved an extension, and there are promises they'll get to a new piece of legislation, albeit there's still plenty of challenges remaining. How did ASA feel about the extension, and is that extension adequate to cover you for more than a year?
First of all, we were excited and very pleased that we had an extension of the Farm Bill because simply, as you noted well, Congress ran out of time because of the gridlock and the speaker dramas in the House and everything else. So Congress ran out of time. We needed to have an extension. Congress came through, and so we're very thankful that they did come through with an extension, and also glad that they included some of the so-called orphan programs as well that did not have funding baseline to continue. And so I think the extension, first of all, is very good news, but we believe that Congress needs to now do its job, and that probably has to happen early in the year, first quarter, beginning of second quarter of 2024, and they need to pass a new farm bill because a one-year extension was fine, but what we really need is longer-term certainty so folks can plan and know what's available. And so we're pushing hard for Congress to write a new farm bill early in 2024.
So if you're going to update base acres, if you're going to move reference prices higher to reflect the cost of production, it's going to cost money. And many of the leaders have said there's just no more money outside of what is within the parameters of the respective ag committees in the House and in the Senate. So it's going to be a heavy lift. They are covered through the end of September. And if it's not done, I would suggest, you know, the deeper you get into 24, the more political things are going to be. You could see a play that this thing might be extended again. How would that affect the soy industry if you were caught for more than 1 year of an extension?
Well, we don't want to throw in the towel just yet, but you're absolutely right that it will get difficult. If we get into June, May, June, certainly by July, and they haven't passed a farm bill yet, then we are going to be needing a one-year extension because just the political process and the elections and recesses to go home for campaigning, that all takes precedence over any almost everything else. And so we will be needing an extension at that time. But like I said, Jeff, we're not ready to throw in the towel on that. But the funding challenges are real. We have Senator Stabenow, chair of the Senate Ag Committee, has said that she has an agreement with Majority Leader Schumer to identify at least, you know, $5 billion of additional funds. $5 billion, you know, is a big number. But yet when you talk about increasing reference prices, strengthening crop insurance, doing, you know, funding research, funding market foreign trade and market development efforts, et cetera, that $5 billion is not going to go very far.
So how important in the view of the soy industry to update base acres? Corn growers want it mandatory.
We are strongly in favor of a voluntary base update up to the farmer. We are not supporting a mandatory base update. We've been all along been supporting a voluntary base update. It would be up to, you know, individual farmers and their circumstances for them to take a look at the programs and see if they wanted to update their base acres.
How far up does the soybean reference price need to move?
Oh, a good deal over where it is now. We have not put out a formal number because obviously we're working with the committees on that and what is the art of the possible, but it needs a substantial improvement.
Steve, two members of the Senate Agriculture Committee from the Northeast asked the GAO to offer an evaluation of crop insurance. GAO responded that a means test could certainly save money up to $15 million a year. What's the Soybean Association's view of employing a means test for this risk management tool?
Farm programs are means tested, but crop insurance is risk management. Farmers are paying in the premiums. And the means testing, you know, we are not supportive of that at all. You know, the suggestions that the GAO came out with to means tests, those are some of the tired same suggestions that have been made for many years by some folks. But it's always been pointed out that, you know, if you means test, you drive out some of the other, you know, producers that are utilizing the program, you reduce your risk pool, and you actually make crop insurance more expensive and less stable. And that's not what we want to do. We want it to be, you know, an insurance program, risk management, that's available for all farmers. And what was really striking to me about that, about all of the negative effects that that would have, to save $15 million. $15 million in the terms of the farm bill, of a $1.5 trillion farm bill, it's peanuts. It would cause a lot of harm for very little gain.
Steve, it's obvious that some global customers are very concerned about how the soybean is produced. And the soy cooperation between the Soybean Association and the United Soybean Board, as well as USEC, you came up with a production model that U.S. growers have signed into that apparently is giving us advantage in the global landscape. But it'll be hard, from what I have learned from farmers, to achieve those goals without crop protection products, without chemistries. So in that, how important or how challenging might the EBA's strategy for endangered species and the products they use for sustainability, how challenging?
Extremely challenging, Jeff. When you take a look at farmers' use of crop protection tools, they not only need to utilize crop protection tools to, you know, protect their crop from weeds and insects that, you know, can reduce your production, as any farmer knows, by, you know, in some cases, 50% or more. We need to do that. But also, as you rightly noted, farmers utilize these crop protection tools to implement conservation tillage practices. So they don't have to till the soil to destroy the weeds. They use herbicides. If you want to plant cover crops and then terminate the cover crops, so either before planting or right after planting, you need herbicides. And what is really of concern about the EPA's new herbicide strategy is that it could potentially make the use of those crop protection products difficult or impossible over large swaths of the American heartland. We're very much concerned about that, and we've asked EPA to go back to the drawing board to take a look, that it's going too far, that they need to make sure that farmers still have the ability to farm. They still have the ability to implement these conservation and sustainable agriculture practices. We're all in favor of, I think, you know, making sure that we're protecting endangered and vulnerable species. But we also have to make sure that we are doing it in the right manner, that doesn't basically put large swaths of the economy out of business. There has to be practical ways that we can both protect species and protect our economy, and protect farmers. And that's what we've been urging EPA to do.
Does the American Soybean Association have a challenge for the way that EPA handled chlorpyrifos?
Yes, we were very disappointed when the EPA decided to revoke all tolerances for chlorpyrifos, even though their own scientists, EPA's own scientists, said that there were 11 high benefit and low risk uses, and soybeans being among them. And so we, along with some other grower groups, challenged that EPA decision, saying you're not following the science and you're not following the law. And we were very, very pleased just recently when the court ruled that the EPA's decision was arbitrary and capricious, that they didn't that their own scientists indeed had found that there were 11 safe uses of chlorpyrifos, and they didn't consider all of their options when they did that. And so we're hoping that this is not only good news for chlorpyrifos, but also sends a signal to the EPA that you need to follow the science, and you need to consider all of your options when making these kinds of decisions.
Fertilizer costs have abated a little bit in 23, but are still much higher than they were in previous years. You had some success in the regulatory area of trade. Is it enough?
No, it's not enough. We need to, you know, do whatever we can to try to keep those input prices down and try to support a robust, not only domestic fertilizer industry, but also imports that are critical to the supply. You know, we've been working with some of the fertilizer companies and the Fertilizer Institute on mining of adding as well as adding some of you know, the fertilizers to the critical minerals list for the U.S. and trying to expedite permitting so that that can take place. But also we think that imports are a key part of satisfying the demand that we have here in the United States. And so we at the American Soybean Association were very active in fighting the phosphate anti-dumping duties, countervailing duties that were being pursued. We had some success with the Court of International Trade ruling in our favor and remanding those duties back to the Commerce Department and the ITC. We've had the Commerce Department that recently reduced the phosphate duties down from about 20% down to around 2%. So that's very good news, and we're you know, again, this was a high priority for us, and we've been very active on that because, yeah, fertilizers are a critical input for American agriculture, and we need both a robust domestic supply, but we also need to make sure that we're not throttling back on imports.
As we look at the industry, obviously, trade is important, and thankful that the extension of the Farm Bill included funds for the MAP and FMD. Steve, does an increase in domestic demand reduce the need to continue to look for market opportunities and gaining a market advantage in the globe?
I don't think so. You know, we are exporting from the soybean industry. About 50% of the production is destined for overseas. And while, you know, we've talked about the domestic demand that's increasing for biofuels, which is the oil fraction of the soybean, the 20% of the soybean, you have the other 80% plus a whole lot of whole soybeans that we're still going to continue to export. We got production that continues to expand. So we still need to be developing those markets of the future. So we need those market development resources. That continues to do that because, you know, we have, you know, 97, 98% of the world's population lives outside of the United States. And we need access to them. And of course, these market development programs are very good news for, and allow us to try to develop those markets, of the future as well as to expand existing markets.
One of the changes that's taking place with the American Soybean Association is hiring your own staff there in Washington, and you have expanded to that staff, and it sounds like they'll have their work cut out for them in 2024 and beyond.
Yes, and that is a change, and you know, it's been wonderful. We have a dedicated staff, a group of lobbyists that are working for us in Washington DC, working to expand, you know, markets for us, and we're you know, adding, trying to expand that staff, as well, just because the issues aren't getting any easier and, the needs that the soybean industry and agriculture in general have of where we have to work not only with Congress, also with the administration, and then increasingly on the judicial front, to make sure that we're active and that we're defending the products and pursuing the right policies so that not only the soybean industry but all of agriculture can be successful. And, you know, it becomes a full-time job because we have more and more members of Congress that aren't from rural areas at all. And so there's just a lot of education that we have to do and to make sure that Congress is enacting the right policies.
Well, Steve Sinske, you have embarked on a career that continues of being a foot soldier for agriculture and service to farmers, whether at your Soybean Association or your time at USDA. We thank you for your service and also thank you for being with us here on this edition of Open Mic. Steve, it's Open Mic, and today the mic is yours.
Well, thank you very much, Jeff. And again, it's been my great honor and to serve America's farmers and ranchers and in various positions, including here at the soybean industry. I want to just wish all of food and agriculture, a very prosperous and healthy 2024.
Our thanks to Steve Sinske, CEO of the American Soybean Association, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Dowling.